Welcome to Hacks and Jacks, a fantasy baseball podcast. I am Joe Galina.
Acknowledge me.
And as always, I'm joined by my buddy Scott Chu. Scott looking spiffy this morning. Well, actually, it's 11:52 a.m. Sunday, May 19th. How are you today?
Not too bad. Got one of my dinosaur shirts on. Been a while since I had one of these out. Mostly, you know, neon dinosaur stuff tends to be a summer thing, right? I don't have a ton of that in my winter wardrobe. So finally get to bust that out as it's been pretty hot here in Michigan for the weekend. But hey, I'm digging it. I'm back.
There you go. Yeah, it's been a while. You're right, since I've seen dinosaur attire on you, and it's looking very becoming. And I'm hoping that within one of my things I want to do, like, you know, within the next few months, is I want to go to the American Museum of Natural History here in New York. I haven't been there in a while, and they have obviously a great dinosaur display. And I'll be thinking of you as I take a look at the T-Rexes and all that stuff. So good stuff. So I don't know. Last week we were talking about my issues in my TGFBI league. It's a 15-team league. Individual leagues, then it's got an overall component as well. We were talking about that I had lost Christian and Carcion Strand for 4 to 6 weeks due to a broken wrist, and you gave me some good advice. I added Jake Bowers, and you know, he is a streamer, but he hit two home runs for me in the past week. One of them was a grand slam, batted just .231, but that's okay. Now I've got another issue that I'm sure that a lot of people have as well, and Austin Riley hasn't played all week, dealing with inflammation to his intercostal muscle. That's experiencing some pain in his side. And originally he was talking about it as if it was just, like, you know, a couple of day thing, and the Braves didn't put him on the IL, but he hasn't played all week and he was in my starting lineup. So I'm thinking I got to bench him now because the TGFBI league does not have an IL spot. So I'm looking for some third base replacements, and as we've spoken in the past, kind of third base has kind of been a shallow position in fantasy baseball this season. So I'm looking. Joey Ortiz seems to be. I'll bring up a few names, but Joey Ortiz plays for the Brewers, third base and second base eligible. Seems to be one of the better options for me. In 39 games, 5 home runs, 15 RBI. .294 batting average, .941 OPS, has a good minor league pedigree, had 19 home runs in 2022 with 85 RBI, and in 4 minor league seasons, .286 batting average, .806 OPS. What do you think about him as at least a streaming option for the next week or two? Because he's been playing every day.
Yeah, absolutely. And he may have a little bit more upside than that. This guy, he's got a bit of a prospect pedigree, sort of like you pointed out there. I think, you know, last I looked, some places had him as a top 50 overall prospect. Now, keep in mind that the pure baseball prospect lists will keep Ortiz up higher because he's a very, very good fielder in the infield. So he's a little more valuable to real baseball teams. That does help him stay in games. Like, defense has some bearing on fantasy in that it gives you a chance to play. And it can help define positions or even make you like a multi-eligible guy, but it doesn't have that direct impact. So the power has been a little bit of a surprise, right? He's got 5 home runs and is almost 40 games now in the major leagues. The plate discipline has been very good. He's walking more right now through 120 plate appearances than he ever really showed us in the upper minors, right? So he hasn't been in the minors for a terribly long time in terms of plate appearances, but Joey Ortiz, you know, walking 13% of the time, that's a surprise. I'm not sure I expect that to continue as pitchers continue to change how they approach him, but he should avoid strikeouts pretty darn well. Now, for a full season, this is probably like a 20 home run guy with a handful of stolen bases and good ratios, which, again, in a 12 teamer, 10 teamer, that's not really a guy that's like a set and forget, right? There's lots of them in the fantasy landscape. These 20 home run, 5 to 10 steal guys with decent ratios. When I say decent, I mean, like, he's hitting .294 right now, but more realistically, it's probably something like .260. Maybe a little better, a little worse, depending on luck and a few other things. But Joey Ortiz, I think he's well worth an add for anyone who needs that infield help, right? He's in Yahoo leagues, he's probably also eligible at second base. He's appeared there 6 times.
Yeah.
But so with Ortiz, again, he's great to pull in. Now, this is not a permanent fix. That's the part. I think you alluded to it earlier. Not a permanent fix. You don't need it to be. You know, don't be that person asking Joey Ortiz or some other dude on my wire rest of season, because rest of season don't matter. Mm-hmm. Right. Right. What we care about is maybe the next week or two. And I think he's absolutely fine in that, you know, in that particular respect, because he's hitting well. He's moving up in the lineup a little bit. We've seen he actually hit third the other day. I don't think he'll do that again, but he's batting more like sixth now instead of just always being eighth. I think that's going to keep kind of moving up and around. So that should be helpful. And that'll just make those hits turn into more than, you know, nothings. Right. And again, right. He's playing well. The Brewers offense is, you know, firing on all cylinders. So yeah, absolutely. That's probably one of, if still available, probably one of the better infield ads that's going to be, that I could say is probably across most leagues. In daily leagues, he may have already been scooped up, but especially folks in weekly leagues, he might still be out there a lot. You know, he really came on fire this week, although he hit a couple home runs last week as well. So yeah, Joey Ortiz is probably going to be a focus for a lot of people, and he's fine. He's not too bad.
Yeah. 154 batting average against lefties this season, but there's only been, he's only had 31 plate appearances against them. And I just checked his MILB.com stats, and that really hasn't been an issue for him. So yeah, he's going to be my number one ad in TGFBI. I was also looking at, and I think these are really for people who are desperate, but Gio Urshela, first base, third base eligible, plays for your Tigers. You know, former Yankee, when he initially came up, he was an empty bat, but, you know, I think across a full season, you could probably count on him for maybe 15 home runs and a decent batting average, in 62 games last season for the Angels, batted .299, in 22 games for your Tigers this season, batting .290, really has a great glove, so that might help to keep his bat in the lineup. But, you know, definitely not an Ortiz. Another guy I was looking at was Ezekiel Duran, third base, shortstop, outfield eligible for the Rangers. To me, he's really an empty bat in 32 games so far this season. Zero home runs, four RBI, a stolen base, batting .286. But I think between those three names I just threw out, Ortiz is the best option. But I guess if you're really desperate and Ortiz is gone, maybe Urshela is your next best bet if you're looking for a third baseman.
So it depends on what you need. This is another thing that's come up a lot, you know, in the Reddit AMAs and just people that ask me, you know, there's two types of replacements that you need to be thinking about. You've got replacing a position, right? So if you've lost, you know, if you're going to be without Austin Riley for a little bit, we don't know exactly when he'll be back. You might just be looking for a third baseman, right? Mm-hmm. This is very common in points leagues. You don't have a specific need. You need a third baseman who scores points, right? That's one type of calculus. But if you're in a categories league, it may be that your real thing you're after, for example, if you've been missing Austin, you know, if you're missing Austin Riley, and you know, to some extent you could argue you've been missing him most of the season, what you need is power, right? Now there's plenty of ways to fill in your third base spot, right? And you know, again, you could say like, oh, well, Gio Urshela is available. Now, one, I think he's been playing a little extra since he came back off the IL, because right when he came back, the Tigers played two lefties and they definitely want to get him in against lefties. I think against righties, he's going to sit about half the time. Maybe it just depends on how the Tigers want to shake up that infield. And again, it's good batting average. I think in a points league, he's viable if he's going to be playing most, you know, every day, most days, something like that. Otherwise, again, kind of uninteresting. The Tigers offense is very, very up and down. I know they just scored 8 runs on the Diamondbacks recently, all with they got like 6 runs with 2 outs. It was wild, but for the most part, they've really struggled to score runs. So I worry that empty batting average is truly empty batting average. Ezekiel Duran, super interesting, cause he's available, you know, he can play all these positions, but he's not that good of a fantasy player at any of those positions, right? He does a little bit of everything, a very sort of jack of all trades guy, both in terms of fielding and in terms of what he can do. He can run a little bit. He can hit a little bit. He's been hot a few times in the past. His name comes up because people love the flexibility, but I just don't see what there is to get excited about. Another guy, if you're just looking for, you know, I need a third baseman or a shortstop, you know, Edmundo Sosa is out there. He's been playing for, you know, for the Phillies. He hits near the bottom of that batting order, but the batting order has been doing fairly well. Again, this is not a high upside guy. I think in a full season, we might see him do like a 15 home run, 15 stolen base kind of thing at some point with okay ratios. I think they're, I'm stunned at how much he's walking, right? We've actually seen Edmundo Sosa up and around. You know, he used to be on the Cardinals. We've seen him play. He's never walked like this. So very interested to see if something has really changed. It's only 65 plate appearances, but maybe there's something there. And, you know, at the end of the day, when I'm looking at these guys, a lot of them, you know, who maybe seem like streamers, we're going to talk about some other guys who have been around the block before, trying to understand if they're worth it this time when in the past they haven't. It's trying to figure out if they're doing something different, right? And that's the one thing that intrigues me about Edmundo Sosa, is that he's walking a lot more, right? A lot more. Then, I mean, his career walk rate through 894 plate appearances is 4.4, and it's a 10.8 this season. Again, only 65 plate appearances, but that's a fairly okay sample size for walks. And when it's this much more than ever before, I'm interested because he could really use more on base because you're, again, not a ton of power with Edmundo Sosa, not a ton of speed, but if he's going to get to that 15 home runs, 15 stolen bases over the course of a full season, he won't do that this year. There's not enough time. But if he's going to get the maximum value, it's because he keeps getting on base. He just keeps getting on base. Hits the occasional home run, keeps getting on base, keeps getting a chance to steal, keeps getting a chance to add on a couple runs. So I'm interested in him because he's doing something very different versus guys who I'm pretty sure we're going to talk about later who aren't. They're just the same guy and they happen to be hot. Like Jake Bowers is the same guy he's always been. He just happens to be hot right now. So he's fine for a stream. He's really nice in OBP. His batting average always stinks, but he's really nice in OBP. He's fine for now. Gio Urshela, the few at-bats he's had with the Tigers, he looks like the same dude he was with the Yankees and the Angels. He's a guy who can slap the ball around a little bit. Maybe, like you said, maybe in a full season, 15 home runs, and mostly just like a 275-ish average.
Yeah, when he first came up with the Yankees, when they first rostered him, he was just known as just a total empty bat, and it was just so refreshing to see that. I mean, you know, he's not a slugger by any means, but he could, you know, handle himself at the plate where you're not going to get zeros across the board. But yeah, so an interesting bat there. And when you mentioned that Riley, you really haven't gotten much from him, and that's surely the case. Where in his first 37 games, 3 home runs, 18 RBI, 388 slug. We're really not used to seeing this from a guy like Austin Riley. So I don't know. Was there anything that you had identified previously? Anything that showed up as different? I mean, is there something in the water in Atlanta? Because I know that a lot of people were still asking you about Ronald Acuña Jr. On the Reddit AMA that you host every Friday afternoon. So, I mean, I don't know. Austin Riley, I mean, it's tough to live with what he's given you with so far this season, but obviously where you've picked him up in drafts, it's not like you're going to sit him because you might end up missing out on a couple of home run game, you know, when he finally snaps out of it.
You know, with Austin Riley, and actually this is sort of true of Matt Olson as well. The more I look at the numbers, the more I'm like, look, there's a couple things here and there that aren't quite what they should be. Like Austin Riley should probably be pulling the ball a little bit more. But the plate discipline's good. Everything looks fine. It's just the results that are missing. I know I've talked about this before as well. Sometimes it's just the results that are missing, right? It's just that these fly balls aren't going as far. Right. And that's probably the hardest thing to truly analyze. It's one thing if like, oh, I can see that he's swinging and missing more, or it's a certain type of pitch or something like that. With Riley, he's just off right now. Right. I mean, that's the way it is. Now, early in his career, Austin Riley being off meant a billion strikeouts, and it doesn't now. Right. So, I mean, it stinks. And maybe, you know, maybe it's this injury thing. Right? Maybe he just needed some time to let that get a little better. Maybe it's been nagging him a little. We usually don't hear about that till after the season ends. So all we can do is, you know, wildly speculate until a player says something or an action happens. So with Riley, I mean, I haven't moved him down my list that much because everything under the hood looks fine. He still hits the ball pretty hard, right? I mean, that's probably the biggest thing with Acuña Jr. that is, you know, kind of giving people some pause, is that his, you know, his exit velocity is down quite a bit. But even then, you know, Ronald Acuna Jr. has been a top 40 hitter this season, mm-hmm. right? Like he actually is a top 40 hitter like right now, which means that's his floor. And I'll take that all day, especially if you think brighter, you know, better days are coming for Ronald Acuna Jr. With Austin Riley, we don't really see that either. The barrel rate is fine. The hard hit rate, 50%. It's fine. Everything's fine. Mm-hmm. Like there's nothing like his average exit velocity, I guess, is a tick down from last year. But like that doesn't mean a ton to me. Right. Like it's one mile per hour. It doesn't really change enough. He's still hitting the ball over 90 miles an hour. I have nothing. And that's the part where I throw my hands up and say, I'll wait it out then. Cause nothing looks broken. Right.
Right.
Other than with Austin Riley right now, we know about the injury, right? That he's dealing with this thing. We don't know how long he's been dealing with it. We just know that he can't play with it at this point. Maybe this week off is exactly what he needs, right? Maybe we see him come back sometime next week and hits a home run or two and everything is fine and happy and the world goes back to turning the way it has always turned. But until then, we kind of can only speculate. But because everything under the hood looks fine, I'm mostly going to say you got to just ride it out. Like it's a terrible time to trade him. It's a terrible time to trade Ronald Acuña Jr. It's a terrible time to trade Julio Rodriguez. It's a horrible time to trade any of these stars that are slumping, Corbin Carroll, all these guys. You can't trade them because that's just taking losses now, right? And that's if someone is even interested in trading for them, right? I can't imagine a lot of people are, especially in redraft. They're just not that interested. So instead of selling low, like I get it. You're like, oh, I can't keep starting him. You probably can, actually. In many cases, you can. Like, I'll tell you this. I'm in a somewhat high-stakes points league, right? And it's got some weird rules, and we are 2-4 right now. We're probably about to be 2-5. We are the fourth highest-scoring team in this league. We have been a top-four scoring team in a 12-team league. We've been a top-four scoring team in 5 of the 7 games, right? 5 of the 7 weeks. And one of our wins is one of the weeks we weren't one of the top 4 scoring teams, right?
You're just hitting the hot opponent, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Every time. And we've played against most of the top teams in the league for the first half of the season. And my buddy's like, hey, maybe we got to, you know, call it. We got to make some drastic action. It's like, no, we don't. We're scoring points. We're scoring bunches of them, right? We have a lot of points. We have more points than most teams with a better record than us. We just have bad luck. And while it feels like it's been a really long time, and it has to an extent, 7 weeks out of 25, right? Seven, or even if your playoffs start a little early, it's 7 weeks out of what, 20? A third of the way in? You can have a bad third, right? And everything will still be fine, especially when everything under the hood is fine. We are scoring bunches of points. We are not losing a lot of our big players. We have not made drastic moves. So with that in mind, I get it. The win-loss record feels bad. Being lower in the standings feels bad. But all the stuff under the hood is fine. We need to stay the course. That's what it's like with Austin Riley and Matt Olson. A lesser extent with Ronald Acuna Jr. I think with him and guys, you know, we've talked about ad nauseum, like Torque. Those guys are just, I believe in the talent. Everything under the hood doesn't look good, but the strikeouts are all right. So we'll see what happens. That's a little bit different story because the results are so far off and there's not a lot of like, it's not like Austin Riley where I can say, well, hey, he's still hitting the ball hard. He's still doing all these things. Nothing's really jumping out. That, I mean, Austin Riley and Matt Olson fall into this level of bad luck for you, the manager, right? Because they're doing fine. They play every day. They're still in a good lineup. All these things are there. It's not like we knew about some injury that you could have avoided. You're doing the right thing. Just keep them plugged in.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, I agree with a lot of what you said. The only thing is, you know, I know you said that Acuna, and maybe we'll talk about him a little later when we talk about the new bat speed metrics that MLB introduced this week. But yeah, you know, you say he's a top 40 fantasy producer, and yeah, that you know, you'll take that if that's his floor.
Hitter.
Right.
Top 40 hitter. That ends up being like a top 80 something player.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. But I mean, you know, and I get it. If this is the bottom, then you can live with it as long as there's the upside that we expected when we made him the number one overall pick. So that's the only caveat I'll throw in there. But I'm wondering, and Adam Howe and Kevin Hastings brought it up in their On the Wire podcast. I think it was not this week, but last week they just mentioned maybe it's time you know, with the third base position being so shallow or whatnot, you wonder when is the right time to stash a guy like Noelvi Marte, who's eligible to be reinstated off his PED suspension on June 27th. Now, number one, you wonder what you're going to get from him, whether or not, you know, his years and years of top of production in the minor leagues, and he had a nice start to his big league career last year. But you wonder that much, but you also wonder if you have a dead spot on your fantasy team, if it's time to start thinking about maybe stashing him.
Yeah, and I think this is a good time to talk about, I mean, we talk about Noel. I won't talk about Noelvi Marte specifically, because you can also throw other guys in this bunch, right? Like if you need an infielder and you're waiting for Jackson Holliday to come back, mm-hmm. or you're waiting for Junior Caminero to get the call,
right?
Like these, there's guys to stash. And here's the thing. In these 10 and 12 team leagues, like the more standard setup that's on Yahoo and ESPN, your bench has room for about one hitter, right? That's it. Just the one guy. I pointed at my monitor to like try to be dramatic, but none of you are going to see it. But it's dramatic.
You startled me. You startled me because I saw you pointing.
Generally speaking, you have one bench spot for a hitter, right? And it's very hard to make it a guy who's not playing. It's very, very difficult. Now, if you have an NA spot, that's different. Go ahead, stash him. If they can go into your NA spot, fill it. Your NA spot should always be full. You should always have someone in it at all times. Right, even if you don't think they're going to play, just throw them in. Like we know that Jason Dominguez is probably not coming back.
Mm-hmm.
We had the report this week. Yep. The Yankees are probably not going to call him up. They like the outfield they've got. Now, again, injuries can happen, right? Giancarlo Stanton, Aaron Judge, these guys not known for long track records of health. But you know, assuming that the report stays true, which we have no reason to believe it isn't, he's not coming up. But even then, put somebody in your NA spot. Anybody, because it's a free spot you get to use mm-hmm. if you've got one, right? I get asked about any spots. They should all be full all the time
mm-hmm.
because of course. You lose absolutely nothing. And if they end up getting called up, you got to take them off. You might just drop them. That's fine. Who cares, mm-hmm. right? No harm, no foul. But when you don't have an NA spot, it's really hard. Unless you're, so with NFBC, they have six total bench spots. It's weekly. So you don't need like a ton of flexibility for day-to-day moves. That one, you know, maybe you can hold a spot unless you're using it for a bunch of other IL guys that you're mm-hmm. waiting to come up between pitching and hitting, right? So I don't love stashing, even though third base is desperate, right? Noelvi Marte probably going to come right up and be the everyday third baseman for the Reds whenever he's ready to do that, whenever he can start really kind of playing games and all that. Sure, fine. But like with Junior Caminero as an example, we don't know what his role is going to be. We don't know what the role of like any Rays guys is.
The Rays so, gonna Ray.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you're using a real bench spot, I really struggle in redraft leagues, especially the shallower ones, with saying, oh, stash this guy, right? Maybe if you know that like they'll come up in a week or two, we don't know that about any of these guys. If you want to talk about stashing Noelvi Marte in most leagues, you're probably doing it when he started playing in games again, right? When he's kind of, when like there's sort of a path, like when we have some kind of time.
Well, we know what his role is going to be, but then it might be too late though.
It might be. It maybe you jump a little early, but you know, I also am not sure that he's like so good in a shallow league that you're going to be really bummed you missed out.
Mm-hmm.
I think he'll be decent, but
a 15 teamer, I think it might be worth
15 teamer. Yeah. That calculus changes a bit because the wire is so bare all the time. That it's not like you had someone you were going to use that bench spot on in the first place. But in those 12 teamers, there's probably someone good that you could have on your bench right now in a daily league who's going to keep help filling in your roster every single day, who is going to be contributing. It's hard to have that as a dead spot. So it's league context. If you have an NA spot, always keep it full. If you're in a 10 or 12 teamer with a shallow bench, like four or five bench spots, it's really difficult to stash. Like prospects or anything, really difficult to stash because you need that spot to keep your lineup full and supported. If you're in a deeper league, it's all about what's on the wire and how much room you got, right? That that NFBC style with no IL, they just have to sit on your bench. The two leagues I have that are NFBC style, I ain't got no room. Right? My IL is half my bench and the other half is guys that I'm rotating in based on, you know, what kind of matchups they have. So it kind of goes into that. But that's sort of the calculus in your mind that you should be doing, whoever the player is, right? Like, whatever it is, it's very first, what do I lose by not, by having someone who doesn't play, especially if they might not play for a month?
Yeah. Good stuff. So this will probably be a good spot for us to take our first break. When we come back, as I alluded to before, MLB has introduced some new StatCast metrics that measure bat speed and blasts and all kinds of stuff that's interesting. I want to see how Scott's going to be using that when he creates his hitter list that you should be checking out every week. Comes out every Wednesday. We'll talk about all of that right after this. All right, we're back. Hacks and Jacks, a fantasy baseball podcast. Joe Galina and Scott Chu. You can follow me at Joe Galina. You can follow Scott Chu at If The Chu Fits. And Scott, last week, if you take a look at the title that I chose for our podcast last week, I talked about Gleyber Torres, Spencer Torkelson, and Paul Goldschmidt, three guys that were slumping, and we seem to have awakened some giants here, because Gleyber, past 7 days, batted .292 with an .820 OPS, a home run, and four RBI and stolen base. Your man Spencer Torkelson hit his first two home runs of the season over the past week, which is welcome, because he hadn't had any when we talked about him last week. And Paul Goldschmidt still striking out a bunch, but batted .333 for the past week with a .956 OPS, two home runs, five RBI. So I guess these players ought to thank us for bringing up the fact that they're slumping, because it seems to kind of ignite a little fire in them.
That's the thing I was talking about earlier, though, right? With these guys, you believed in talent. That's all it is. Look, nothing looked, I shouldn't say nothing looked very broken. Paul Goldschmidt, I still have some concerns, right? I'm very concerned just about the strikeout rate. It is very unusual for him to have a strikeout rate this high for this long, right? Now, touching 30% for a short time for Goldschmidt, that happens. Right? That's not that weird. But to stay there for this amount of time, that is what's unusual for him. So I'm still a little bit concerned about that. But for the other guys, you know, it's, again, I know it hasn't been fun, but I do think there's brighter days ahead for Torkelson and for Gleyber. And The infield's been tough to fill in as it is. Those are the kinds of stashes I like to do, where I know the stats haven't been good, but it's not like they are completely empty spots, right?
Yes.
You can sort of air quote stash Gleyber Torres by maybe not starting him all the time until you feel more comfortable about what he's producing, but you totally can when you need a body, right? Like, he is playing, he's available. Torkelson is still playing every day. He's not going down to the minors, like these kinds of things. Paul Goldschmidt, right? Paul Goldschmidt is someone who, look, we recently had a buy sell article come out on the site. We have one come out every week. It's a really, really good piece, and it calls Goldschmidt a sell. And that does not mean Goldschmidt is bad, right? Like, this is actually, as much as I say I believe in Goldschmidt's talent going forward, this is also a selling opportunity. And that is because someone might be interested now, right? No one was interested 2 weeks ago. Someone might be interested today because we're seeing some of the results come in. And if you are not a believer in Goldschmidt, or you already have another first baseman and Goldschmidt was sort of a corner infield guy for you, and you feel like you can fill that, but you also need a reliever or something like that, it is, now is the time. You can say, hey, you can sort of pitch it like, hey, you want to buy a little low? I got a need, right? And Goldschmidt isn't, you know, I don't really need Goldschmidt, right? I hope he turns it around for you and it does great. But what I really need is speed or saves or whatever it is. I think this is a good opportunity because people might start remembering that Goldschmidt is good. Now, there's still concerns. Like, I led with that because it's the most important thing. But there is some light at the end of this tunnel, and that he does still know how to hit. He knows what he's doing here, right? You know, it'd be nice if Arenado is next. Maybe get him a little spike, right? Under the hood for Arenado looks a little better than it did for Goldschmidt. Actually, considerably better, even though the results aren't quite there yet. But it's hard to move Arenado because he's not doing anything. And trading is the most human thing in fantasy baseball, because it ain't about projections. It's funny, trading tools, right? I got asked about trading tools on the AMA and what kind of trading tool do I like as a trade grader? I hate almost all of them. And that's because the tools are all about projection going forward. They might, like some of the more sophisticated ones where you enter your team and your league info and the standings and all that. If you took all that time, it could maybe give you a grade, but it's only about projections going forward, right? In a vacuum. That's all it's doing. And trading doesn't work that way. Like a lot of trades that would be seen as good trades by an evaluator have no chance because people aren't interested in trading for players that are doing poorly. Not many people are that interested in either trading for or trading away Ronald Acuña Jr. You don't want to trade him away because you're like, I don't want to sell low. And you don't want to trade for him because you're like, oh, he's not looked good, mm-hmm. right? Like it's hard. Trading is the most human thing. And that's why Paul Goldschmidt might be an opportunity, even though Nolan Arenado looks a little nicer under the hood, most of the stats are still there. He's the harder one to trade because he hasn't done anything yet.
Right.
So that's, and that's the case with all those guys, right? I don't think any of them are worth trading, but definitely stashing as sort of like this active stash, because I do think they're all going to turn around because I think they're all still talented.
Yeah. Well, talking about, I like to look at Yahoo has a pretty good trade. It's not an evaluator. It just tells you who's been moved recently. So just taking a look at what's happened recently with Goldschmidt, since you brought him up as a potential, sell. Paul Goldschmidt for Anthony Santander. Let's see.
I like that.
Both of them are kind of struggling a little bit. You're getting an outfielder for a first baseman, might fill a need,
And Santander, I mean, this is normal for Santander, right? Mm-hmm. He's a streaky power hitter, and we saw some of the ups, and now we're seeing some of the lows. But, I have no question that he's going to be a 27 to 29 home run guy this year.
Mm-hmm. How about Goldschmidt for Yusei Kikuchi? Kikuchi starting pitcher for
that,
Blue Jays. He's been doing well.
That is interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that one's kind of hard. I get asked often, like, hey, how do you look at hitter for pitcher evaluations? And it's like, that's the hardest one, honestly, because it's really hard to compare the two. Kikuchi, I'm very intrigued by how he's done so well this season. He's stopped giving up home runs. He's not walking guys. That's an interesting one because it's sort of, there's a lot of risk with Kikuchi that this is as good as it gets. And there's risk with Goldschmidt in that, like, maybe his new ceiling is even lower than it was last year. I mm-hmm. like that as an exchange of risks. I think that was probably a hard swallow. Like, the Kikuchi person's basically saying, hey, I think I'm selling high.
Mm-hmm.
And the Goldschmidt person is like, I'm getting someone who's performing now. So that right. that is an interesting trade because you both feel like you got what you needed. And there's not really a good way to analyze it until it's over.
Yeah. And of course, we don't know, what the parameters are on each side. It looks like somebody needed some help at pitching and somebody needed a corner infielder or whatnot. And it just worked out. And that's one of the things about trades as well. And, the Tout Wars website puts out a question every week. And I think last week it was about trading and you brought up some good stuff on trades. And I always like to try to make a trade where both sides are benefiting, right? So you that's what you got to look for, I guess. But should I give you one more? This one's kind of like a wash to me. Goldschmidt for Vinny Pasquantino.
It's a floor for ceiling kind of move, right?
Yeah,
so Pasquantino's playing a little bit better. We know what his floor is. The ratios are always going to be good. Mm-hmm. He's not striking out 30% of the time. He probably never will for any extended period of time. But he doesn't have Goldschmidt's ceiling rest of the way.
Yeah.
Right. He doesn't have Goldschmidt's power for sure. He's not on quite as good of a team. I don't want to say the offense in St. Louis is good, but it mm-hmm. should become better as Nolan Arenado and Goldschmidt improve. So there's a higher ceiling with Goldschmidt, but the floor probably belong. At first I thought that Goldschmidt had the higher floor, but the more the strikeout rate goes on, the more I'm like, well, at least I know what Vinny Pasquantino's floor is. I have no idea what it is for Goldschmidt right now. I mean, we're looking at it, but I don't know how long this can continue.
Yeah. I'll throw you one more because there's some superstars involved. This is an interesting one. Goldschmidt and Juan Soto for Aaron Nola and Shohei Ohtani. Some superstars being exchanged there. So,
Ohtani wins. So the person who gets Ohtani always wins, but in this case especially, right? Like, yeah. Juan Soto's great, but he's not that much better than Ohtani, right? So then the trade is Aaron Nola for Paul Goldschmidt. That's an easy one for me.
Yeah. All right. So talking about Goldschmidt, and we had mentioned this last week when we were talking about his struggles, is that in the offseason, he went to Driveline to try to get his bat speed increased, and kind of feeds into MLB's introduction of these new bat speed metrics to StatCast. So, I mean, bat speed, you know, there's really no explanation needed for that. It's self-explanatory, but number one guy on that list is Giancarlo Stanton. And, you know, I watch him play every day. He struggles a lot, but so far this season, he's been better. But no doubt that, you know, you give him a fastball inside, the way he turns on it, it's just amazing. So he leads Major League Baseball with an 80.5 bat speed metric. And your guy, O'Neill Cruz, is number two. And just looking up and down this list, Ronald Acuna, who we just spoke about, at number five, just ahead of Aaron Judge. So, one of the things I was reading the article that accompanied the release, they said, you know, slower bat speed doesn't always mean worse, because then you have a guy like Luis Arraez. He has the slowest average bat speed at 62 miles per hour, but he won a batting title last season. So, and they compared it to a pitcher who doesn't have a blazing fastball, but is still successful, right? So, I mean, you don't have to have these high bat speed metrics in order to be a successful hitter. But they did bring up, which was interesting, if you have a bat speed of 80 plus miles per hour, you have a 321 batting average, and you add plus two runs value per 100 at bats. And then it just progressively gets lower. 70 to 79 miles per hour, 274 batting average, and a 0 to 69 miles per hour bat speed, an average 202 batting average. So I guess when you look at Arraez, who has a 62 mile per hour bat speed, he's an outlier because he hits for higher average, right?
He's always an outlier. Yeah. Luis Arraez. Always an outlier, because what he's trying to do at the plate is so fundamentally different than what other players are usually trying to do at the plate. Mm-hmm. So that bat speed's slow, probably because there's hesitation instantly, right? So what he's trying to do is hit every pitch he sees, right? Like Luis Arraez, there are very few pitches that he doesn't think he could slap over the second baseman. You don't need to swing the bat that hard to do that. Right? You don't need to swing the bat 80 miles an hour to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You just, it's very hand-eye coordination, right? It's very, I don't need to swing it hard. I just need to get enough of it to do this specific type of damage. So that's why for a player like Arraez, bat speed doesn't matter,
mm-hmm.
right? He can wait. Like his swing starts a little later. It's very just like, all right, where is this thing? Okay, there it is. Boom. Versus Giancarlo Stanton, not really that interested in where it is a lot of the time.
Right.
It's, I think this will be in the zone swinging. Mm-hmm. And the bat speed metrics are pretty cool, right? The thing about them is they're sort of just an extension of the max exit velocity leaderboard, right? That it's the same top two guys, Stanton, Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
Giancarlo Stanton and O'Neill Cruz have the two hardest hit balls this season, and they are the two guys who swing the bat the hardest. Like, what a surprise, mm-hmm. right? It is, bat speed is a really good measure of like raw power. And if you look at the top of the leaderboard, that's really what you get from it, right? Like Giancarlo Stanton, O'Neill Cruz, Kyle Schwarber, Christopher Morel, surprisingly, Ronald Acuna Jr., but not that surprisingly, hit 40 home runs last year. Aaron Judge, Joe Adell, Matt Chapman, Juan Soto, Julio Rodriguez, a bunch of dudes who can hit 30 home runs, right? They don't always, because bat speed doesn't matter when you miss, right? It just makes more air.
Right.
But, yeah. Like, bat speed is a really good proxy for raw power.
Mm-hmm.
What would happen if he squared it up, right? When you swing the bat 80 miles an hour and square it up, heck, it's going to go a long way. Giancarlo Stanton does his like fast swing rate pretty much every, he swings as hard as he can every single time he swings the bat, mm-hmm. right? Like no one is within 20% of this fast swing rate, which is of his competitive swings, how many of them are as hard as they can do it. And Giancarlo Stanton is always, that's why he's, you know, his home run fly ball rate so high, because mm-hmm. if he hit it real hard. He just doesn't hit it, right? Strikes out a lot, rarely walks, misses a bunch of balls in the zone, misses balls outside the zone. It's funny that Giancarlo Stanton is sort of hot right now.
Right really when the slider
comes out, because people are like, oh man, this is really telling me something. It's not. Giancarlo Stanton is the same dude he's always been. He has always been someone who we're like, yeah, he hits the ball harder than just about anybody when he hits it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like that's the thing. And that's the thing about O'Neill Cruz, right? We're like, look, this dude can hit 120 mile an hour line drive. Like it was a lot. It was amazing. Right. But he doesn't always hit it. He has these strikeout problems. Mm-hmm. So he has to like, you know, you have to adjust your approach a little bit. The biggest thing for the bat speed leaderboards that I am really, really going to be interested in is what does it look like year to year?
Right.
I've actually already talked to our own Kyle Bland, our data specialist about this. And while there are rolling charts, they're very boring, right? Because this bat speed stuff stabilizes in season really quickly. So the only time it would really maybe be useful is if we had a hunch that a guy was injured, is the bat speed slowing down. And it might not, depending on what type of injury it is, right? Mm-hmm. But the biggest thing is, again, it's a good proxy for raw power, bat speed. It's great. I mean, if you look, like, sure, Javier Baez still has a lot of raw power. He just never squares the ball up, mm-hmm. ever. So like the raw power isn't game power, right? Because that's the other thing. So when you look at there's a cool stat they have called blasts, right? That's when they swung it really hard.
That's my favorite. Yeah.
Yeah. And they squared it up. And who's number two on that list, right? Juan Soto. Because not only does Juan Soto have a bunch of power, right? The other thing is he picks his spots. He is only swinging the bat that hard when he feels like this is a pitch I can destroy.
Mm-hmm.
Versus a Giancarlo Stanton, who is not like, he's on the list. He has a lot of, you know, his blasts are high because every single swing is as hard as it can, as he can do. So like he squared up the ball 45 times this year and they're all considered blasts because for every single one of them, he swung as hard as he could. But for like a Juan Soto or a Shohei Ohtani, they're a lot more discerning, right? Number of blasts, like Yandy Diaz on that list. And even though his average bat speed is kind of like in the middle, he's on this list because Yandy Diaz is very selective in terms of when I swing hard. It's because I think I'm going to do some damage.
Mm-hmm. Right?
And that is the only reason, because he doesn't have a ton of raw power. So I like that blasts sort of metric because it gives us a sense of both, right? It gives us a sense of not only can he swing it hard, but he can square it up. That he's not swinging it real hard on sliders in the dirt. Giancarlo Stanton. And at his worst, O'Neill Cruz, right? Like those swings could be a million miles an hour and they won't do anything. Versus, again, these smart, like the smart swings, the smart power, right? Now, squared up doesn't mean barrel, right? It is not the same as a barrel. It just means they didn't foul. I think it basically just means they didn't foul tip it. They didn't just graze it, right? They squared it up, but it still might be a ground ball, whatever. So again, I think these stats are really cool.
Yeah.
I think they're very fun. I think I'm not using them at all really on the hitter list because I've yet to have one tell me something I didn't already know,
mm-hmm.
which is this guy has power. This guy has raw power. That's really what it tells me. And again, on the other end, it's the same, right? The guys on that list, like, yeah, they don't have tons of raw power. Bryson Stott does not have a ton of raw power, right? He never did. The one interesting one is Isak Paredes, but that's because just like Luis Arraez, Isak Paredes is sort of a unicorn and that he's trying to do one thing very consistently and he doesn't have to swing the ball that hard, like the bat that hard to do it. He's trying to put a ball 331 feet to left field, right down the line. Cause most of the time that's a home run. That's it. That's all he's trying to do. So he doesn't need to swing the bat that hard. And he almost never actually, it's funny how often he swings the bat over 75 miles an hour is basically never because he didn't need to. Because he can hit close to 30 home runs without ever swinging the bat that hard because none of those home runs are to center. They are all pulled.
I'll tell you, Blake Perkins, number one on the squared up metric. And so the technical definition on the squared up is that they assume that each swing has a max attainable exit velocity based on the speed of the swing and the pitch coming in. So squared up swing happens when a swing attains at least 80% of the max potential exit velocity of that swing. Now, squared up, if you do square up, average batting average is 372. If you don't, average batting average is 127. And it's interesting that a guy like Blake Perkins, I think he's batting 214. So he's an outlier, right?
But who's number two?
Yeah. No, I know.
Who is Arias?
Yeah. Mark Canha is on the top 10 on this list too. There's
Nolan Schaunel.
Yeah.
Brendan Donovan.
There are outliers here, yeah.
Nico Horner, Andrew Benintendi, Jung-Hoo Lee. You know what these guys are? They are slappers, right? They take what they're given and try to slap the ball into the field of play, right? That's all they're trying to do. And in doing so, they can usually generate high batting averages. I think Nolan Schaunel is a guy who can have a higher batting average. Brendan Donovan is a guy who can put up higher batting averages. Mark Canha, Nico Horner, those guys, that's what they do because they are trying to hit for average and contact. So they will square it up and then rarely hit it very hard. William Contreras is interesting on that list because he does have a bit of pop for a catcher, like a 20 to 25-ish home run kind of pop.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of interesting. It's interesting to see Mookie Betts on that list. I wonder how much of that is being like a leadoff guy, what he's trying to do a lot of the time. He doesn't always do blasts, but again, he's very selective. So that may be an issue where Mookie Betts only swings it hard when he's like, yeah, I'm pretty darn sure this is fastball up, right? Mm-hmm. I'm going to try to hit it. But the rest are guys that are really reactive at the dish with, again, another exception being Shohei Ohtani. Guys that are really, really good can be in weird places on leaderboards. They'll do stuff that doesn't make sense because like their talent is much different than the norm. But again, Juan Soto, it's no doubt that he's squared up because he doesn't swing at that other stuff. Mm-hmm. He doesn't swing at things that are difficult to square up. He doesn't want to. So Luis Arias will square up anything, right? Nolan Schaunel will try to square up whatever he can get, even if there's no way to hit a home run on that pitch. It's high and away. Not going to get a home run on that pitch, especially if you're someone who doesn't have a ton of raw power. Doesn't matter. Because he's not trying to hit a home run. He's trying to dunk it over the second baseman or the shortstop and get his butt over to first.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's it. So like it's a very cool leaderboard. It tells us a lot of interesting things, but there are a lot of things we kind of already knew and now have a number to support.
Right.
And what, again, very interesting, I think, will be the year-to-year changes.
Yes.
Especially in bat speed, especially with older players, because we're always worried about holding the bag. I think year to year bat speed is going to be that one. When we start seeing this in spring training and someone's bat speed is down 3 miles an hour, it's going to be like, I'd love to see this track. Like I'd love to see the history for Javier Baez, right? I'd love to see like what it used to be versus now.
Right.
Right.
That's also going to be interesting to compare it to the average exit velocity and bat speed. I'm sure that they're going to correlate. No.
Oh, I'm sure. And we're going to get tons of this data. There's so much of it coming out. You should, if you're on X, Twitter, whatever, there's people doing really cool stuff with this publicly available data. But what I don't want you to do is go to this leaderboard and say, I'm going to find my gem on the wire from this list. Cause I don't think you will because it's only giving you this one metric and it's still sort of in isolation.
So you're not telling everybody to jump on the Blake Perkins bandwagon right now.
Not yet.
No. Okay. Yet. Before we take our second break, we talked about Giancarlo Stanton being at the top of a lot of these power and bat speed metrics and all this stuff. By the way, blasts, my favorite, like I said. So it's when a batter squares up a ball and does so with at least a minimum amount of bat speed. And when you hit a blast, or when your swing is considered a blast, you have a 546 batting average and a 1.116 slug. If you don't blast, if the swing is not a blast, you have a 178 batting average and a 224 slug. But since we talked about Stanton and I still have that trade market up for Yahoo, just this trade is just really crazy. I'll just bring up a couple of them, but this one in particular, I mean, I'm thinking Stanton's got to be a sell high, no? You know,
Giancarlo Stanton is a very difficult player to trade, and there's never been a better time to do it than right now.
Right.
Because the blast and squared up thing, it's missing one very important metric that I'd like to see. It does it based on percentage of contact, which is going to be really favorable to Stanton because he doesn't make a ton of contact in the first place. And when he does, it tends to go a long way.
Mm-hmm.
It does it based on swing, right? It doesn't do it like a per plate appearance kind of thing, right? Because so many of Stanton's plate appearances end in a strikeout.
Oh, yeah.
Where his bat speed did absolutely nothing for anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the other number that you should really keep in mind. Guys who can do a lot of blasts and have a low strikeout rate, they're interesting. Alec Bohm on that list, very interesting, right? Riley Green. If you watch Riley Green in person, it's a loud bat, man. When he hits the ball, it is a crack. And this is really helping sort of put that into a number.
Mm-hmm.
That Riley Green hits the ball hard when he hits it, right? And because the strikeout rate is down, it's a bit more interesting. And again, not all blasts are home runs because it has nothing to do with launch angle.
Correct. Right.
Yeah, that's why Yandy Diaz is so high on this list. He hits a bunch of really hard ground balls.
Even Bohm mentioned, I think he only has 4 home runs this season. And, you know, we've been waiting for his power to kick in, and doesn't look like he's going to be much more than maybe right now a 20 home run guy. But like I said, he only has 4 so far this season.
A great example that isn't Yandy Diaz of raw power versus game power, mm-hmm. right? Because Alec Bohm doesn't try to elevate the ball that much. He is very much a line drive kind of hitter. It helps him get a really good batting average. And he really converted a lot of power into that. He sort of changed the way he attacks the baseball. And that's really cool. And it makes StatCast love him, right? But in reality, again, we know the home run power ceiling is probably somewhere around 20 to 22 home runs for Alec Bohm because of how he plays. Not because he couldn't do it if he wanted to. He would just sacrifice a lot to do it. We talk about sacrificing contact for power and vice versa, right? Sacrifice some home run power for more contact because you're not trying to uppercut all the time. You're not trying to directly pull the ball. That is what Alec Bohm did. To sort of turn it around for him because he was really struggling. But when he turns it around to say, okay, you know what? I am going to swing, I'm going to swing pretty hard. I'm going to hit the ball hard, but I'm not going to try to put all these things in the air, like way in the air, right? Mm-hmm. What I'm going to try to do is just get that ball, like the little league approach, right? I'm going to try to hit it line drive right up the middle, right? And that's helped him a lot. And if you accept that about Alec Bohm, and say like, look, I see all this right on the StatCast page. I also know the type of thing he's trying to do at the plate. That's how you can come up with a power projection that's more than just raw exit velocity.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So about Stanton's, this is a crazy trade. Stanton for Julio Rodriguez. And I know a lot of people were asking you about Julio Rodriguez on the AMA, but that's obviously a win for the Julio Rodriguez owner or rosterer.
Trades are human, man. Trades are human.
Yeah, this one's more in line, I guess. Giancarlo Stanton for Justin Turner, straight up.
Ooh, that one I do kind of like. I mean, it's nice to have the infield versatility. Mm. Both of them are guys who, Turner's not playing very well right now. Mm. I don't hate that, probably because that Turner manager, especially in like a standard Yahoo league, was very much probably thinking like, I might cut this guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Giancarlo Stanton versus Luis Garcia Jr., second baseman for the Nationals. Ooh,
if healthy, I do like what Luis Garcia Jr. can be.
Mm.
And I think it's much more dependable, I think, than Giancarlo Stanton, who, look, Joe, you've seen plenty of Giancarlo Stanton in your time.
Sure, sure.
We both know there's going to be a month where he hits like 3 balls in play.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no
and two
doubt.
Will be home runs, but he'll hit like 70, like 0.070 for like a month, like a, what feels like a 75% strikeout rate. So Luis Garcia Jr. is never going to do that. He might get low batting averages, but he's going to put a lot of balls in play. He's always going to have a chance.
Yep. All right. So this is a good spot for us to take our second break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about some players on the upswing I feel that we talk about a lot of, there's a lot of negativity when it comes to hitting, but let's try to identify a couple of hitters that have been performing well. We'll talk about them right after this. All right, we're back. Hacks and Jacks, a fantasy baseball podcast. We were talking about the bat speed metrics and all the new tools that we have at our disposal. A lot of fun. And I know I said at the break we were going to talk about some players that are on the upswing, but I feel that you've been asked about this guy, outfielder for the Pittsburgh Pirates, Brian Reynolds, in terms of what he's been doing so far this season. And when you look at it, it's kind of like a block kind of season through his first 47 games, 5 home runs, 17 runs scored, 20 RBI, 3 stolen bases, .254 batting average. His expected power stats say he's still got something left in the tank, but he's approaching 30 years old. Is this, regressing, or is he doing kind of like what you expected him to be doing when, before the start of the season? Because he's got kind of a mixed bag. The traditional stats are progressing lower, but the zone contact's down. But the expected power stats say that there's some juice left in the tank.
I did it, Joe. I got you to mention zone contact. All on
there
your
you
own.
Go. There you go, buddy.
and Reynolds, I would be very concerned if Reynolds somehow dipped below 80% for any significant amount of time, because that's just not part of his game. And I moved Reynolds down quite a bit on my hitter list, and it did draw some questions, and they're fair, right? The thing about Brian Reynolds isn't that my range of projections really changed, right? They did a little bit. The floor is probably about what I thought it was, but the ceiling, I had always kind of held this hope that there was like going to be this season where like maybe Brian Reynolds can approach more like 95 to 100 RBI, 90, some more runs scored because the offense finally takes a step forward. And maybe he can be more than the 260 hitter that we've seen. And I've finally been beaten into submission that no, probably not. Mm-hmm. In terms of power, 25 home runs is about what he's going to give us. He had that 127 home run season. That's as spiky as it's going to get. That's as many as he's going to hit. He's got 24 of them in 2021 and 2023. That's probably what he's going to do again. Right? Well, actually, I think he might be a little on the lower side.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The lower side of that projection, it's a really tight range of projections for Brian Reynolds, and they're all kind of bland. But surprisingly, when you're in his range of the rankings, the difference between 20 home runs and 75 RBI and 25 home runs and 85 RBI is actually a fairly considerable difference, because you've got a bunch of guys that are really tightly packed. And when you feel like the ceiling or reasonable outcome now that 75th percentile projection is a little worse, and it doesn't take much to move down the rankings quite a bit in those kinds of tiers, these like early middle tiers. So he moves down a lot, even without my opinion of him overall not that different, right? Especially if I say it in numbers. I think maybe instead of projecting 23 to 25 home runs, now I'm like, all right, 19 to 22. Mm-hmm. And then instead of, hoping for another, he had 84 RBI last season. He had 90 of them in 2021. I'm like, yeah, we can do that again. And now it's like 80 is pushing it, right? Mm-hmm. This Pirates offense does not look good. If they lose O'Neill Cruz to injury like they have in every other season, it's going to get even worse. So just those kinds of downgrades that don't sound like much move rankings a lot in those early high tiers. The thing is, the action to take is nothing. You don't do it. Like, he's just a guy. He's a plug and play. You don't sit him. He recently had a 5-hit game. That was awesome. And it's possible that I move him back up a little bit if he goes on a little bit of a bender, right? And does enough for me to say like, okay, maybe it was something else. And again, the StatCast data is pretty good. Although, I don't love that he's hitting a lot of ground balls, right? He doesn't really pull the ball that much. He does it a fair amount, but he's still the same guy. It's just maybe a little bit more boring as he continues to age. Mm-hmm. Again, he's not old, but he was never that exciting in the first place. And if I think he's even a little more boring, it has a big impact on his rank.
Right. Right. All right. So let's talk about a couple of batters that are kind of on the upswing. Davis Snyder, second base outfielder for the Blue Jays. Starting to move up in that lineup, batting leadoff recently, and through his first 37 games, 5 home runs, 17 RBI, 267 batting average, but a 371 OBP, and that's after he had a 404 OBP in 35 games last season. You look at his 162-game average, 29 home runs, 83 RBI, and 7 stolen bases. Overall, his K rate is lower this season, 149 WRC+, plus, so he's hitting better than 49% of the average players. Barrel rate is way above the league average. League average is around 7%. His barrel rate so far this season, 20.3. What do you think about Davis Schneider and his recent upswing?
So we talked about it. It's funny. I'm not sure everybody necessarily remembers that we talked about Davis Schneider quite a bit last year too. Mm-hmm. And it was because he went on an unbelievable hot streak mm-hmm. last year. And it was on the back of some very poor contact. The zone contact was terrible. He was hitting a bunch of home runs, but we were like, look, the bottom's going to fall out of this. You can't do this forever. And then eventually the bottom fell out, and it fell out hard. Davis Schneider finished the season terribly. It was like, I want to say at least a couple of weeks of just absolutely nothing. And the people that added him after the hot streak was already half over got nothing, right? They got none of the juice. They saw the overall stat line was good, but they didn't get any of those stats. They were already gone. Mm-hmm. Right. Like if I want to talk like Kevin Pillar, right? Like he's hitting the ball like crazy. Right. But if you add him right now, you've probably missed most of the juice, right? Like it's gone. Mm-hmm. You don't get those stats. So it's all about, you know, going forward, not rest of season, but going forward short term. Davis Schneider. So a couple things he's doing just a little differently and better. Right. So number one, he's always going to walk a ton. We love that. We do. And his quality of contact is good. It always was. Davis Schneider, when he hits the ball, he hits it fairly hard. He gets the ball up in the air. He had a crazy high barrel rate last year. It's high this year, right? The real issue is how often does he make contact? That is really the thing. So he, and again, this is a guy who's an extreme fly ball hitter. When you're, I'm talking 50, you know, if you use the Fangraphs numbers, which I usually do, because it's easier to think of just the three. If you want to do a real deep dive, the Statcast breakup of all the different types, like, flares and burners and topped and all those things. It's very interesting. But just from a quick look, I like the Fangraphs line drive, ground ball, fly ball. This dude hits 50% fly balls. And that means two things. Number one, it means the batting average is always going to suffer because you know what a fly ball that doesn't leave the yard is? It's an out, Joe. It's an out every time. And even when it's not an out, they don't get any credit for it because it's an error, right? Maybe it's a sack fly, but it ain't a hit. So that's going to keep, you know, the batting average, despite how hard he hits the ball, the batting average, like I don't buy this 271 through 72 games at all. I think the projections are much closer. Long-term, this is a 230, 240 hitter. You cannot hit you can't hit 271 with this kind of fly ball rate for more than about how long Davis Schneider's done it. So on one hand, keep in mind that that's the type of player he is. Lots of pulled fly balls, which is awesome, but you may not have a good batting average that goes with it. Right? I think like think of a poor man's version of Kyle Schwarber in that sense, right? But a little better batting average, not as many home runs, but that's the kind of thing because he's just constantly hitting the ball up and pulled, and it's an out every time it doesn't leave the yard. So that's one thing. The thing that I've been tracking most, and the thing I gave you, you know, the kudos for is zone contact. So last season, 73%. That means he missed one in four pitches he swung at in the zone. My threshold tends to be about 80%. Once you get below 80%, very few players can manage consistency at that number. Aaron Judge, one of the very few guys who can sort of hang around a little below 80%. And when he has slumps, they are ugly, right? Because he misses. He misses in the zone. But I forgive Aaron Judge because of how good all the other skills are. Right. Davis Schneider is not Aaron Judge. So I worry, and the zone contact rate has been coming down as the season's progressed. So it started out pretty good. It has been coming down. It's about 80.8% right now. But the overall contact rate, 75%, that's better. I can live with that. So if the contact numbers stay good for Davis Schneider, this could be a especially in OBP, a really valuable guy who can play second base and outfield, who does have power, might not have the best batting average, but the rate, like the OBP is always going to be good. This is a guy I like, especially because, you know, with George Springer struggling so badly this season, the Blue Jays would love for Schneider to just stay their leadoff guy, at least against righties, maybe against lefties. They switch it around and pull, you know, Springer back up like they did last time on Friday. But they would love that. They would love a guy who can just take a ton of walks, right? Like, which is what Schneider does.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, he'll pop out sometimes, but when he gets on base, it's a walk, right? Otherwise it's a leadoff home run and hey, we're up 1-0, right? So that's the thing. All with Schneider, it's all about watching that contact rate and especially the zone contact rate. Because once it dips below 80, it's going to be hard for him to succeed long term. He can go on crazy hot streaks because he hits the ball. You know, when he's seeing the ball well, he hits everything in the air, he pulls it. It's a ton of home runs. But the moment the contact starts to fade, he has stretches like we saw towards the end of last year where it's 0 for 4s, 0 for 5s, over and over and over again. Because pitchers start to realize when he's not seeing it well, they can challenge him in the zone all day long. They don't need to get him to chase because he misses so many pitches in the zone. And you don't want major league pitchers to think they can challenge you in the zone because that means you're not scary. It means you're probably, we're probably looking at a hitter who isn't what we're going to want for fantasy because, again, pitchers will start thinking, I can throw pitches in the zone to this home run hitter and I'm not too worried about it. So that's when you see that zone contact dip, that's when I'm going to be thinking about selling high maybe. But for now, ride it out. I do think there's a good player here, especially if the contact can stay up like it has so far to the start of this season.
And to add on to what you said about in terms of some batting average regression, you look at the StatCast expected batting average. Right now he's batting .267. Expected batting average per StatCast is .243. And if you look at pitcher lists, expected batting average for him, it's even worse, .204. So
it's that pulled fly ball that doesn't leave the yard.
Yeah. All right. How about Jeremy Peña, shortstop for the Astros? Sneaky good season, even though the one of the few bright spots for the Astros, especially now since Blanco got caught with some stuff on his glove and is suspended. But they've had
just
problems.
Just wash your hands, man. It's gross.
So Peña, in his first, I've got him for 46 games, batting 5 home runs, 28 runs scored. That's really good. 20 RBI, 6 stolen bases with a .324 batting average. Strikeout rate's down. I'm thinking if he keeps up at this pace, he could approach, you know, 2020 season, maybe, you know, high teens, but the stolen bases, he should have over 20. Do you think that this is sustainable for him?
The thing that is impressing me more than anything is that strikeout rate drop. This was a guy striking out about 20% of the time through his first two seasons. I thought that's just what we were going to get. I don't want to say I'd written him off, but I had felt pretty strongly that, you know, 2022 was the ceiling, right? And maybe a ceiling he wouldn't return to, especially with the way the power sort of fell apart last year. Man, am I impressed by this strikeout rate, because he's never going to walk. Jeremy Peña is not a guy who's trying to take walks like ever. It's a career 5.2% rate. That's like a White Sox player, basically. Those guys just don't walk, and he doesn't either. But he didn't need to because he's a slap hitter. He's, you know, again, he's never going to hit the ball that hard, but he's got a great hard hit rate right now. The batting average, I'm not sure. You know, obviously, I don't think he's a .324 hitter. He'd been a 260 something hitter coming into the season. I think he can be a little better than that. I think Jeremy Peña's batting average is elevated a little right now because he has a slightly elevated line drive rate. It's up around 24.5%. That'll probably come down to 20 just based on what we've seen from him in the past. But because of the improved strikeout rate, I mean, cutting it way, way down from a, you know, 24.2% his first season, 20.3% season after, and now 13.8. Like that is an elite strikeout rate for a guy, especially one who like plays every day, doesn't see platoons. He's only 26 years old. He's, again, I'm really impressed by that change. And it's simply just a matter of he doesn't miss. Like, he didn't miss that much before either, but he's really just, I don't know what someone whispered in his ear during the offseason, but Jeremy Pena has just really gotten locked into the plate when he was already pretty good at it, right? So his contact rates before were like 87%, 89%. That's really good. Now it's 93.3, right? Mm. The overall contact rate went from 71 to 74 to 78. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, he is just making much more contact. He's not swinging more, right? He's gotten better at fighting off some pitches outside, but he just is missing less, which I love, right? I do. So with Jeremy Pena, I think 2020 might be a little aggressive, just because I'm not sure the power's all the way there, but I'd say that's a decent ceiling. Right. I think it's probably going to be more like 17. I mean, I'm splitting hairs here. I'm talking about guys. Maybe more like 17 or 18 to 17 or 18.
Yeah. I kind of said approaching. So, yeah, the 20 might be a little aggressive, but I think the stolen bases, he could exceed 20.
You know, I think the thing I really would love to see I've already moved up Pena quite a bit in my season long rankings. And the way he moves up higher, the way I get even more excited. The reason why it might actually, like, if you're going to get Jeremy Pena, someone might be thinking, I got to sell high, got to sell high. If someone in your league is like that, there's a reason that might not be the case. And it's because what if they decide to move Pena up higher in the order, right? Like, why, you know, especially with the way they're playing right now, Jose Altuve is a great player, but why not have Altuve with the power hit fourth or fifth, right? Instead of Pena down there hitting fifth. Right. Actually, recently when they gave Yordan Alvarez a day off, they put Pena in the two hole. If somehow Jeremy Pena got back up to hitting first or second, then we see a whole nother level. Cause that dude, this offense is going to explode, right? Especially the top half of this order. It's very, very good. I think that he, you know, he can get some good RBI numbers now, but man, if he starts to appear towards the top of the lineup, like first or second more often, that's going to be when it's like, uh-oh, now it's time. Right. Mm-hmm. That's what we saw with Anthony Volpe. It's a more extreme there because he went from ninth to first or second. And there's still plenty of value to be had hitting fifth behind Tucker, Alvarez, Bregman. But it just means, you know, it's mostly just RBI, not runs scored. But man, that would be great. Just see like just those couple extra plate appearances a game, all those runs scored. I'd love to see that. But even now, Jeremy Pena has really given himself a new ceiling from what we've seen.
Yep. How about Bryson Stott? I've always been a big Bryson Stott fan, second baseman for the Phillies. First 42 games, 5 home runs, 29 RBI, 12 stolen bases, .280 batting average. Really been on fire for the past month, and the Phillies had been sitting him, but now he's playing basically every day, you know, keeping his bat in the lineup. His splits against righties and lefties is pretty even, 277 against righties, 290 against left-handed pitching. Bryson Stott, I thought I saw him move up, or you mentioned him in your hitter list article, but like I said, I've been a fan for a while.
Well, you know why he was playing part-time, don't you? It's because for his first 25 games, 91 plate appearances, Bryson Stott was hitting 210, 275, 284. That was good for a 61 WRC plus. He had one home run and he had 3 stolen bases through 25 games. He was terrible, right? He had gotten pushed all the way down to 8th in the batting order. And then, and this is through April 27th. And then since then, it's been a whole new world for Bryson Stott. He has been one of the hottest hitter in baseball. Let me give you a little stat just to really give you an idea of how Jekyll and Hyde this has been. So again, I told you those stats for the first 25 games. Mm-hmm. Since then, he's got 18 games. He has a 22.2% walk rate to an 8.3% strikeout rate.
Whoa.
That is getting close to a 3-to-1 split on walks to strikeouts. That is insane. Juan Soto doesn't do this, right? Obviously, it's not going to last forever. But you know, he's certainly just unreal. He's got 4 home runs in those games. He's got 9 stolen bases, thanks in large part to a 542 OBP over his last 72 plate appearances. 542, right? Like,
that's pretty good.
This is one of the hottest stretches I have seen especially for a player like Stott, who overall is fairly limited on the power, right? Like, I still am not projecting much more than 15-ish home runs like you hit last year.
Yeah.
The thing, you know, the thing I said in the hitter list, this hot streak, even though the first part of the season was so bad, this hot streak, what it really means is, hey, you remember that season-long projection that we sort of had before, which was like, you know, trying to get back to 15 home runs and 30 stolen bases? It looked impossible on April 27th. It is all the way back into, yeah, that sounds right. Like, that's the kind of swing that this sort of stretch can have. And again, I didn't know that he was the type of player that could do this, right? Usually it's stars that can go on this kind of run, but now it's Bryson Stott. Not going to say he's a star, but maybe he's a little better than I gave him credit for. And really that just means he's as good as he was last year. I think a lot of people have expected a regression from last season. But you know, maybe that is what he is. Maybe that's the kind of player he can be. So very exciting news. And again, the plate discipline is what is absolutely shocking, especially for the last 17 games. Like, seriously, almost 3-1 walks to strikeouts. Like, I don't know that I've ever seen a player do that even for this long. Usually when you see it, it's for like a week. We're talking 17 games. We're talking 3 weeks of action, right? Like, that is, it is absolutely insane. It is wild. And you should be very excited.
Yeah. I am. He's on my tout team. And if you look at it, I mean, I know what you're saying. He's probably playing, not probably, but obviously based on the stats that you talked about, playing over his head. But here's a guy that in three minor league seasons had a 300 batting average and an 885 OPS. So not really coming out of nowhere, but yeah, definitely playing over his head.
Yeah, it's doubling the walk rate. For a speed guy like Stott to double his walk rate, that's a huge deal. Right, because it means more times to be on base, and very specifically first base, right? Because that's, you know, second base is the one that gets stolen, right? Like, sometimes we see guys go on these stretches where they don't steal bases, and it's like, oh, it's because he keeps hitting doubles, right? Like that you don't steal third that often. If Bryson Stott truly can continue to walk at, say, a 10% rate instead of the 7-ish, 8-ish% he had before, we're talking about a fairly significant number of times on first base, stolen base opportunities, which means he's got 9 in his last 17 games, right? Over a course of full season, that's a ridiculous number. That's like 80 stolen bases, but he stole 31 last season, right? If he keeps walking like this, that's the way he gets to 40. Like, that's the path Bryson Stott has to being like a 12 to 15 home run, 40 stolen base guy. It's walking at a double digit rate. So that's what I would say to keep an eye on as we go forward.
All right. So I think we just about slammed the lid on things for this week. You had put Miguel Vargas's name on our little chat. I know he's going to be playing some more because Max Muncy hit the IL. Vargas, first base, second base, third base, outfield eligible. Do you wait a week to see how many, you know, how his playing time is, or, you know, in terms of adding him or not adding him?
Let's talk about two guys that recently got called up in California real quick. We'll start with Miguel Vargas. He's someone who, look, the minor leagues don't really matter to me for Miguel Vargas, because Miguel Vargas's problem is not how he hits the ball. It's that he never takes the bat off his shoulder. It drives me insane. He's one of the most passive hitters in the entire league, right? And he doesn't really change that when he gets to the majors. And the thing is, you don't get as many, you can't spit on quite as many pitches in the majors as you can in the minors, because the guys in the majors don't make mistakes like that.
Right.
You can't just wait for mistakes all the time. Right. You have to be able to hit a pitcher's pitch. You have to at least swing at a pitcher's pitch. Like, you've got to challenge him a little bit. Miguel Vargas doesn't do that. So playing time, one concern. The other is, will he actually attack the ball? I begged for it all season last season. Not directly, because I don't know him, and he would be rude. But I wanted to see him just get a little more aggressive, just a little. His plate, like, his decision making metrics for PLV always look really good, because generally speaking, the right decision is not to swing, because most pitches are hard to hit. But you got to do it sometimes. You've got to attack when the moment is right, and you can't wait for the perfect pitch. You need to wait for a good pitch to hit, right? In the minors, you can wait for a perfect pitch to hit. In the majors, you have to take the good ones. You have to do something with them. So that's what I want to see from Miguel Vargas. Until he does that, I am totally uninterested in 10 and 12 teamers. The upside is like a 20 home run and a couple stolen bases guy, which again, there's a lot of better in OBP because he can put up a really strong OBP. But again, I don't care until I see him attack. The other guy, Luis Matos, he's been really, really hot lately. People ask me a lot about him. He is so similar to the guy he's replacing in Jung Hoo Lee, who is out for the rest of the season with a torn labrum. Luis Matos, slap hitter, right? We talked about, you know, the Luis Ariases of the world, the Jeff McNeils, the David Fletchers, the, you know, I could list a bunch of guys that are sort of like this. That's Luis Matos. So when he's hot, it looks really cool. When he's cold, it really doesn't. But that's all he is. He's going to have, he's nice in points leagues because he's going to hit a bunch of singles and he doesn't strike out. But Luis Matos just isn't someone who is going to be on my radar in most 10 to 12 team leagues, especially with only three outfielders for standard leagues because it's mostly empty ratios.
All right. So he's mostly, like you said, points league. That's where he gets his value. Because it looks like he's going to be playing
empty ratios. You think better in points.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So, like I said, that just about slams lid on things for this week. Great analysis from Scott Chu. Again, you could follow him on X at If The Chu Fits. You can follow me at Joe Galina. And check out Scott's hitter list article, which debuts each week on Wednesday. And then Friday afternoons, he hosts the AMA Reddit. Great stuff for you to ask Scott. Questions about what to do with your fantasy baseball teams. And as always, we hope that all of your fantasies become realities. And we'll see you next time.